Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times. I will be sitting in for Michael Savage tonight. Michael is off. My buddy, Michael, I just want to take this time to thank you once again for giving me the wonderful honor and opportunity of filling in for you tonight. For all of you out there, please go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest on the latest stories that are breaking. And in particular, there is a story that you will see that will focus on Romney's debate performance. It is a must-read story. Furthermore, we will have coverage of the State of the Union. I will be talking about it later in this show. I don't know how many of you watched the debates last night. It was one of the second or third most watched debates so far this year, or the entire Republican primary. I have to tell you, I watched it. It was a bizarre sight. Here you had Newt Gingrich surging in the polls. Gingrich now having won a major victory in South Carolina, a stunning upset. Now pulling ahead by 9-10 points in Florida. All of this energy, all of this momentum, the Tea Party are people coming out in full drove, in full support for the Newt man. And there he was with Brian Williams, with Mitt Romney, with Rick Santorum, with Ron Paul, and he just laid down. It was like somebody turned the switch off. It reminded me very much of Mike Tyson when he fought heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis. And everybody said, oh, my God, it's going to be a knock 'em, drag 'em out cage fight. And like Tyson just lay down in the corner and he got beaten from one end of the ring to the other. And what happened last night, members of the Savage Nation, is that what happened is that Brian Williams, I think, shrewdly understood that the key to Gingrich's success has been his ability to feed off the crowd, to feed off the passion and the emotion and the anger of the crowd, and then to channel it through himself. That's what he did with Juan Williams. That's what he did with John King. And that's what he was trying to do last night. But when Brian Williams, the NBC moderator, told the crowd, you cannot applaud or clap during the actual debate, only when you're about to approach a commercial, it took the wind out of Gingrich's sails. You can see it. He couldn't play off the crowd. He didn't have the dynamism. He didn't have the energy. He didn't have the passion. And then Mitt Romney, like a surgeon, began to go after Gingrich piece by piece by piece. And let me be very candid with all of you. I have been asked now repeatedly by many people, who do I support in the Republican primary? There are strengths and weaknesses with all of the candidates. I think on the Constitution, Ron Paul is superb. I think on the culture of life, Rick Santorum is superb. I think on understanding the economy and turning this country around in terms of job creation and growth, Mitt Romney would make a superb president. Gingrich, of those four top-tier candidates, the four remaining candidates, is to me the most unelectable and the least conservative. And why do I say that? Because when everything is said and done about Newt Gingrich, He is the consummate Washington insider. And he is now perpetrating a massive fraud upon the Republican primary electorate and upon the American people. He's no outsider. He's no anti-establishment conservative. Just look at his record. It was Newt Gingrich that voted for the Department of Education. It was Newt Gingrich who for 15 years supported a healthcare individual mandate that was at the heart and soul of Obamacare. It is Newt Gingrich who supported cap and trade. It is Newt Gingrich who took $1.6 million from Freddie Mac. It is Newt Gingrich who supported embryonic stem cell research. It is Newt Gingrich who called Paul Ryan's plan to reform Medicare right-wing social engineering. What is conservative about Gingrich? But you're going to say, Jeff, he's a changed man. He's a changed man. He's found Jesus now. He's got his third wife. He's got Calista. He's a new man. After 4 years as House Speaker, it was the Republicans, it was the conservatives who threw him out of office. He wasn't some governor like Romney who served a four-year term. He could have been Speaker in perpetuity. He could have been Speaker for 20 years. He had made such a mess of things on Capitol Hill. There was so much chaos. There was so much disorganization. Bill Clinton kept outmaneuvering Gingrich at every turn, that by the time the 1998 midterm elections came around, the American people couldn't stand him. His approval rating was less than 20%. Conservative Republicans said, this man is going to destroy this party, and they kicked him out. His own party gave him the boot. So what kind of a record is he running on? By the standards of his own party, he's been a failure. And finally, last night, Mitt Romney went after Gingrich's weak points. Finally, he took the gloves off. Finally, the Massachusetts moderate, the man of Bain Capital, the man who was acting like this was going to be a coronation for him and that somehow the Republican Party was going to fall in line, lock, stock, and barrel, finally came out swinging. And he challenged Gingrich right away, right from the opening bell, by saying, you know what, Mr. Speaker? You've been in Washington for 30 years. While you were in Washington, I was at Bain. I was in the private sector. I was creating jobs. I was working my way up the chain of command, the chain of business. And you, sir, resigned in disgrace. Let's play clip one, boys. Roll it.
I think it's about leadership. And the speaker was given an opportunity to be the leader of our party in 1994. And at the end of 4 years, he had to resign in disgrace. Now, in the 1970s, he came to Washington. I went to work in my first job in the 1970s at the bottom level of a consulting firm. In the 1990s, he had to resign in disgrace from this job as speaker. I had the opportunity to go off and run the Olympic Winter Games.
I have to tell you, that line of attack is absolutely brilliant. Now, the problem with Romney is that the way he delivers his attack, he comes across as awkward, he comes across as wooden, frankly, he doesn't deliver it well. He looks uncomfortable as he delivers it. So his delivery is frankly ineffective. Unlike Gingrich, who when he really goes after somebody, he goes after their throat. He's pounding the pulpit. He's pounding the podium. He's standing there pointing his finger and he just lets you have it with both barrels. Romney seems awkward. Romney seems a little bit tongue-tied. But what he's essentially saying is, while Newt Gingrich made his money in Congress, made his money as a lobbyist, made his money playing off the corridors of power here in Washington, D.C., while he was there off the government teat, Romney was in the private sector. In other words, Romney is a self-made man. Romney is a man who started a business, grew a business, and then turned around other businesses. If he uses that line of attack, it will be devastating for Gingrich. And then Romney went in for what he thought was the kill. Here is Romney going after Gingrich on all of his conservative heresies and all of his conservative flip-flops. Boys, roll clip two.
15 years after he left the speakership, the speaker has been working as an influence peddler in Washington. During those 15 years, I helped turn around the Olympics, helped begin a very successful turnaround in the state of Massachusetts. When I was fighting against cap and trade, the speaker was sitting down with Nancy Pelosi on a sofa, encouraging it. When I was fighting to say that the Paul Ryan plan to save Medicare was bold and right, he was saying that it was right-wing social engineering.
Bingo. And so my question to all of you is a very simple one. Last night, you saw Mitt the fighter. You saw Mitt come out and take it to Newt Gingrich. Do you believe that Mitt Romney won the debate? And more than that, did he connect with you? Did he do enough to convince you that he can take the fight to Obama? Are you convinced that Romney has what it takes to defeat Gingrich? 1-800-449-8255. It is Romney versus Gingrich. Who do you side with? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is a good example, though. As a businessman, you know that the gross revenue of Bain wasn't your personal income. We had a company. The company had three offices. The company was being paid. My share annually was about $35,000 a year. And the fact is, I offered strategic advice, largely based on my knowledge of history, including the history of Washington. There are many different kinds of government-sponsored enterprises, and many of them have done very good things. You can make a pretty good argument that in the early years, those housing institutions were responsible for a lot of people getting a lot of good housing.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Well, there you heard it. Gingrich saying that he took $1.6 million from Freddie Mac, but he only got about $35,000 because the rest of the money, well, that went for the company. That was general revenue for the company. So it wasn't he. He didn't personally pocket the $1.6 million. How stupid does he think the American people are? It's his company. It's his consulting firm. Of course the money went to him. Now, what he does with the money, if he wants to pay staff or whatever, that's his business. But he was taking a lot of lobbying contracts. And for him now to say, I gave strategic advice, just stand back and think about this for a second. He wants the American people to believe that Freddie Mac was paying him $30,000 a month for 1 hour. Remember, he just worked for them for 1 hour a month to talk to them about history. When, in fact, people from Freddie Mac have come out and said, we hired Newt Gingrich to promote and tell us how to sell Freddie Mac to Republicans and conservatives on Capitol Hill. This is the same Freddie Mac that led to the housing bubble, that led to the financial crisis, that caused the economic recession that we're in, that helped wipe out trillions from the economy. Mortgage destroyed the mortgages of millions of people. And now Newt Gingrich, after openly saying that whoever profited from Freddie Mac should end up going to prison, is now saying, no, that doesn't apply to me. I just took $35,000, not $1.6 million. My friends, you are looking at a Class A hypocrite. And when the Democrats get this man in a general election campaign, they are going to eviscerate him and tear him limb from limb. 1-800-449-8255. Cameron in New York on line six. Thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, I'm glad to hold, Jeff. It's always refreshing to hear you sit in for the Dr. Savage.
Oh, thanks,
because,
Cameron.
You are unrelenting. You continue to pound these scoundrels, and I don't mean the Republican nominees so much as I do the Obama regime, for what they are, and you have the power of exposition, and we like to hear that nonstop.
Thank you very much, sir. What's on your mind, Cameron?
Little look inside the debates last night, Jeff.
Okay.
Happened to be sitting in with my sister Rose at the debates last night. And what happened that you didn't see during the breaks was that that crowd that was forced to sit there like lemmings on their hands with their mouths shut, with no applause and no emotion shown, as you found prior in this South Carolina debate, which is encouraging to the people who think similarly throughout the country.
Cameron, I don't quite understand your point. I mean, what we do know is this, is that they were ordered by Brian Williams not to clap, not to show any emotion. Now, look, I'll be honest with you. I like emotion at a debate. I don't see what the problem is. But here's the reality. Everybody keeps going on about what a brilliant debater Newt Gingrich is. And there's no question about it. He has his moments of brilliance. But when he goes up against Obama, the presidential commission has already said there will be no clapping, there will be no ovations, there will be no applause during the actual debate. So what you saw last night is likely how Gingrich is going to be, or the format is going to be with Obama. And the other thing that Gingrich is not telling people, which the truth about, is that he's not going to have seven Lincoln Douglas style debates. Obama will never give him that. He's not even going to have three debates. He's going to have two 90-minute debates with four or five liberal moderators where he's going to have 30 to 60 seconds. Now, he may beat Obama in a debate, but we're not voting for the best debater. We're voting for the next commander-in-chief. And on that score, Newt Gingrich is a failure. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com for the latest must-read stories that you cannot get anywhere else. And in particular, before I take the phone calls, there are two stories. They're practically right at the top of michaelsavage.com that I want to draw your attention to. One, they're literally parallel to one another, side by side. One story is of George Soros, who recently gave an interview to the Daily Beast, basically a liberal rag, a liberal internet website. And in that story, Soros admits in his interview that he has invested billions of dollars in MF Global, the company that went bankrupt under John Corzine, that he is investing heavily on behalf of the euro, and he is betting against the U.S. dollar. In other words, George Soros is looking to potentially destroy the dollar and break America the way he broke the Bank of England in the 1990s and made out like a bandit. But right beside the leftist sugar daddy of the Democratic Party is the Vegas casino mogul, the eighth richest man in America, Sheldon Adelson. Adelson, for those of you that don't know him, is trying to make himself the Soros of the right. He has now given a lot of money to Newt Gingrich and to his super PACs. And now seeing Gingrich coming out of South Carolina and having won, with the momentum on his side, fighting Romney in Florida, where there is a nasty air war going on as the campaigns are unleashing one ad against after another against one another, Adelson has now given Gingrich an additional $5 million. Adelson has openly said he will give Gingrich whatever money he needs to be able to win the Republican nomination. And the question that comes to my mind is, If it's wrong for George Soros to spend his illicit millions on buying up think tanks, buying up foundations, buying up influence in Washington, buying up the media, buying up members of the Democratic Party, is it not also, frankly, immoral and illicit for a Vegas casino a mogul, a man who made his money off of gambling and profiting off the misery and gambling addictions of others, who now is just spending it willy-nilly to get his man elected in the Republican primary? In other words, he is buying Newt Gingrich. You don't think Newt Gingrich is going to have to kiss his ring for all the money that he's giving Newt? And so if it's wrong for George Soros, should it not also be wrong for Sheldon Adelson? What is happening to America in which both parties are now being held hostage and essentially under the control of oligarchs? We, my friends, are becoming like Russia, the way the oligarchs just divide up the political parties and divide up the political spoils. That's what's happening. So you have Obama beholden to one oligarch, George Soros, and now potentially you may have another Republican nominee and maybe potentially president, Newt Gingrich, beholden to another oligarch, Sheldon Adelson. My friends, this is not the America of our founding fathers. This is not the America that, frankly, our forefathers who died in Japan, who died in the Pacific, who died storming the beaches of Normandy, fought for. They didn't fight so rich men can control the political process and control political parties. But this is where we are today. And so if Gingrich is willing to be the shill for Sheldon Adelson, how much independence do you think he'll really have? 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to our blazing phone lines. Barry in New York on line 8. Thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
I think Newt Gingrich is an opportunist and a showman. I think he's not a man of substance. A few weeks ago, he was yelling at Mitt for Bain Capital, the direction that this country should be taking and making profits. So he moves the way the wind moves. I don't trust Newt Gingrich. I trust a man who's worked his way up, become rich, and can now lead.
Barry, no, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. Look, let me be very candid with all of you. I am not a big Mitt Romney fan. This is not the second coming of Ronald Reagan. I'm not excited about Romney. I'm not saying Romney is the solution to all of our problems. But I look at Mitt Romney, and here's what I see. I see a family man. I see a man who's led a life of moral and personal integrity. I see a man who built up a business from nothing. I see a man who turned around Staples, turned around the Sporting Authority, turned around numerous other companies, turned around steel mills, turned around potentially Domino's Pizza. Afterwards, Bain Capital turned around Dunkin' Donuts. I see an entrepreneur. I see an investor. I see a businessman who understands the private sector and understands American capitalism. I see a man who turned around a failing Olympics. And what people don't know about that is that it was the only Olympics ever to make a profit. Mitt Romney will put money in your pocket. And if you see America as a bankrupt corporation, then Romney is the CEO to turn it around and fix it. But when I look at Newt Gingrich, after following him in Washington and covering him in Washington, he will do to you what he did to his two ex-wives. I'm telling you, that's the kind of man Newt Gingrich is. And let me be even doubly confessional with all of you. I'm like in the confessional. I am a devout Christian. For me, my oath to God and the oath that I took to my wife on my wedding day is not something I just said because I felt like it. I gave my vow to the eyes of the Lord and to my friends and family that I would honor and cherish my wife till death do us part. If you can break that vow, and not just break it, but break it repeatedly, break it flagrantly, break it without batting an eye, then that says everything I need to know about you. His first wife was his high school math teacher. She was much older than he was. He left her after she had cancer. His second wife, the one he cheated on with his first wife, he left her after she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And then she says, after he's been sleeping around with Calista, who was then his legal aide, that he asked her for an open marriage. This man has been a lifelong serial womanizer and philanderer. He has betrayed women. He has betrayed his political allies. He has betrayed the causes of conservatism. And eventually he will betray you. My friends, think about this. If he was such a brilliant speaker, if he was this man that he portrays himself, balancing four budgets, cutting taxes, you would think he ran the Reagan administration. He defeated the Soviet Empire. He created supply-side economics. If he was this man of such statesmanlike brilliance, how come nobody who worked for him, nobody who worked with him, can come out and vouch for him? How come everybody who's ever worked for him, my friends, if you will cheat on your wife repeatedly, you will cheat on your business partners. You will cheat on your colleagues. You will cheat on your friends. It is a question of character. And this is what we said about Bill Clinton. You remember that in the late 1990s? And we were right. And how come all of a sudden now we are going to betray everything that we stand for? What do you think the DNC is going to do? Just think about this. Stand back. Leave aside the emotion. Leave aside the smear attacks from the liberal media. We know they're in the tank for Obama. We know the double standards of the liberal media. I understand that. You don't think they're going to roll out one ad after another where Gingrich was calling for Clinton's impeachment and talking about the need for family values and the sanctity of marriage while he was, by his own admission, having an affair on his second wife, Marianne Gingrich, with Calista? They're going to charge him as a hypocrite. They're going to charge him as a liar. They're going to charge him as a phony. And what's going to happen, my friends, is he is going to destroy the brand of the conservative movement. He is going to do to conservatism what Bill Clinton has did to liberalism. He will destroy it. And for what? Is this man the only one that can take on Obama? Is he the only one that can defeat Obama? In fact, I will make the argument that of all the four men left on the stage, he is the least electable. Don't sell your soul for this man. He's not worth it. 1-800-449-8255. Richard in Sacramento, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. I got to say that I do like Santorum, but I don't think he's got the money, their experience to take on Obama. You're talking very highly about Romney. Well, Romney was backed by McCain, and I don't trust the Republican establishment. I will pick Newt Gingrich over Romney any day of the week. I'm sorry,
why?
But I just don't
know. No, but why?
Romney.
I hear this all the time. No, I mean, Richard, I got to tell you, I heard this from people in South Carolina. I hear this from people all the time. And I'm just curious. The fact that he's betrayed his wife repeatedly, the fact that he cut an ad with Nancy Pelosi, the fact that he supported cap and trade, the fact that he supported Romney Care, the fact that he supported embryonic stem cell research, the fact that he took $1.6 million from Freddie Mac, the man has been in bed with the Washington establishment. Why would you support him, a consummate corrupt politician, against a man for all of his flaws? I'm not telling you, I'm not saying Romney's perfect. Believe me, he's not my kind of Republican. I'll put it to you that way. But I mean, Romney has real accomplishments. What has Gingrich ever done for you or for this country?
Well, for the moral reasons and what he's done with his women and all that, I really don't care about that. I think he's the only one that can defeat Obama. And you've got to remember, Romney believes in man-made global warming, too.
Well, I mean, look, Romney has flip-flopped on that issue. But when he was forced to act, he did vote against cap and trade. Gingrich, on the other hand, supported cap and trade. But Richard, I want to get to something else that you said, because I'm hearing this now from conservatives, and this is something that conservatives never argued before. We're in fact making a liberal argument, which is what he did with women, what he did with his wives, that's irrelevant. That's what Clinton argued. The private and the public. Public is one thing, private is another. No. Private character is public character. If a man will cheat on his wife, if he will, think about this, it's not just having an affair. For 6 years, every night, from their bedroom in Washington, he called his second wife and said, "I love you." He lied to his wife. Not once, not twice, repeatedly for 6 years. He has broken every sacred vow. And it's not just these two wives. This man, believe me, goes hell of a lot of cheeseburgers. This man is our Bill Clinton. He is conservatism's Bill Clinton. It's going to be a scandal a week. You are going to see women coming out of the woodwork. It's going to be no end with this guy. So if this man was this brilliant statesman that everybody keeps telling me, why was he kicked out of power? Have we forgotten the 1990s already? So don't sell your soul. Don't drink that Kool-Aid, because you are so desperate and you so emotionally want the satisfaction of seeing Gingrich kick Obama on the debate stage. Believe me, he's only going to get two debates. It's going to be 90 minutes. The rest of the time, it's going to be Obama on the stump, shaking hands, backed by the mainstream media with $1 billion in a war chest. You know what Romney can do? Romney can make the issue Obama. Romney can say, he has failed. I will grow America and run America like a business, not an empire. If he makes that argument, Romney can win. But what will Gingrich do? The issue will not be Obama. It will be Gingrich. It's always Gingrich. That's why everybody in Washington, it's not the quote establishment. I'm talking Tea Party people. I'm talking Tea Party Republicans. You know what they're telling me? We're going to lose the House. We're going to lose seats in the Senate. This is going to be a disaster if Gingrich wins the nomination and goes head to head with Obama. My friends, let us not sell out everything for a false con man who is selling us snake oil. This is the most important election in our lifetime. Failure is not an option. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Mr. Speaker, you've been talking a lot about conservative principles in this campaign so far. Is that enough for you? Is that good enough?
Look, I don't want to spend my time commenting on it. I'd like to just tell you that I went to a Goldwater organizing session in 1964. I met with Ronald Reagan for the first time in 1974. I helped Governor Reagan become President Reagan. I then came back, organized a group called GOPAC, spent 16 years building a majority in the House, talked about big ideas, big solutions. So I think it's fair to say I've spent most of my lifetime trying to develop a conservative movement across this country.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Well, there was Newt Gingrich at the debate Monday night, saying basically he built the conservative movement. He was there from the beginning with Barry Goldwater. Now, for all of you out there, 1964 was essentially a battle between the conservative insurgent Barry Goldwater and the liberal country club Republican Nelson Rockefeller. And the party was essentially almost torn apart. But Goldwater came in, defeated Rockefeller. Although he lost the election to Johnson, the Goldwater victory represented the conservative march to power within the Republican Party. The conservatives were now coming out and taking over the Republican Party. Gingrich, in that answer, specifically said that he was an organizer for Goldwater. In other words, he was a conservative right from the beginning. Boys, play that aspect of the clip again.
I went to a Goldwater organizing session in 1964.
Okay. So in 1964, he was in a Barry Goldwater organizing session. Yeah, he was there from the ground floor. Hey, the modern Republican Party was built by Newt Gingrich. But listen to what he said in a 1988 interview when he's then just a Republican member of the House of Representatives from Georgia, when he was interviewed about who he supported in 1964. Was it Goldwater? Boys, roll it.
I think most of us are far more comfortable, whether it's in the House or the Senate or the administration or out talking on the stump, about the kind of issues Lynn was saying, and saying there are huge fundamental underlying differences now between the two approaches to America's future. And I think this party in that sense is a very different party than it was, say, from the fights of the years of the Rockefeller-Goldwater process, a period in which, by the way, I was a Rockefeller state chairman of the South.
A Rockefeller state chairman of the South. So let me get this straight, Newt. Were you for Goldwater or were you for Rockefeller? And this goes to the heart of Gingrich. And this is what I've seen for the last 20 years. He is who the audience he's in front of wants him to be. When he's with Nancy Pelosi, he's for global warming. When he's in front of a Republican crowd in South Carolina, he's a staunch conservative. My friends, there's a word for that. It's called nobody else has the guts to say it. I will. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Dr. Savage is off tonight. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I just want to thank you once again for the incredible opportunity of sitting in for you tonight. I don't know where the time goes. It just flies. You have an absolutely top-rate show and a wonderful audience, and I just can't thank you enough. For all of you out there, we will be later on in this show. We will have a preview of tonight's State of the Union address. You do not want to miss it. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, for the absolute latest sizzling must-read stories that will knock your socks off. And in particular, at tonight's State of the Union address, as presidents always do, they will showcase or highlight one or two guests in particular. They usually sit beside the first lady up in the balcony. He will single them out. People will applaud. One of the people who is going to be a special guest tonight is Warren Buffett's secretary. Now, have you noticed with the liberal left that there are some billionaires they like, there are some wealthy people they like, if they happen to share their progressive politics, but there are other wealthy billionaires or millionaires that they don't like, especially if they happen not to be leftists? And Warren Buffett is right up there with George Soros as being one of Obama's puppeteers. He is frequently a guest at the White House. Obama picks up every phone call that Warren Buffett makes. Warren Buffett, like George Soros, is one of the oligarchs in this country, like you would see in Eastern Europe. And what many people don't understand is now up on the website, is that Obama's decision to kill the Keystone XL pipeline wasn't just him capitulating to the environmentalist movement and the left in his party. No, 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 my friends. As Dr. Savage rightly says, follow the money. You want to know where the truth is? You want to know where the power and the corruption is? Follow the money. Now, just think about this. Here you have a pipeline that is going to come from the tar sands of Alberta, from Canada, our closest ally, our closest friend, reliable oil. There's millions and millions and millions of barrels of that stuff up in Alberta. They're going to build a pipeline all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. We build pipelines in this country. It's not a problem. In fact, we already have pipelines, both above ground and underground, that work perfectly well. This pipeline would create 20,000 immediate construction jobs, shovel-ready jobs, as the president likes to say, unlike his stimulus, where we haven't seen one shovel-ready job. 100,000 indirect jobs, welders, engineers, people who create the equipment. This thing would be an economic boon to the economy. And yet, recklessly, almost treasonously, he just turns it off. No. Now you have to ask yourself, in an election year where the high unemployment, the horrible economy is going to be a big issue. In fact, it's an albatross around his neck. It's a millstone around the president's neck. If a Republican beats him, it will be because of the poor state of the economy. You think he would sign this thing on the dotted line right away? Not so simple. Go to michaelsavage.com. You know who doesn't want this XL pipeline built? Warren Buffett. Because if you go to North Dakota, people don't know this. North Dakota is becoming the new Texas. They have a massive amount of oil and natural gas, and they're producing it from the ground. But instead of delivering it through a pipeline, one of the ways they deliver it is by old-fashioned railroad, through the railway. That's how they get their product all the way down to Texas, where it's refined. Now, because of this boom in oil wealth, which was found, by the way, on private lands. If this was on public land, Obama would shut it down. It'd be gone. North Dakota now has 3.9% unemployment. My friends, it's booming. It's infrastructure projects. It's infrastructure jobs. Oil jobs. Everything. Obama keeps saying, I'm for infrastructure. I'm for infrastructure. Infrastructure. An oil pipeline is infrastructure. It's billions of dollars in infrastructure. No, 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 no. Why does he want the oil to go from North Dakota by railway, but not from Alberta to Texas via oil pipeline? Because 75% of North Dakota's oil goes through the railroad. And you know who owns that railroad? It is the Burlington Northern Santa Fe LLC. Burlington Northern Santa Fe LLC, which just happens to be a unit of, guess what, Warren Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway Incorporated. He owns the railroad that carries the oil from North Dakota all the way to Texas. He doesn't want the oil pipeline because it'll ship the oil, it'll transport the oil at a much cheaper cost. It'll knock his railroad out of business. That's why he doesn't want it. Like the old robber barons in the 19th century, he wants a monopoly on how the oil is shipped and distributed in America. That's why Obama killed the Keystone oil pipeline. And if the workers don't get jobs, if the American people don't get jobs, if we have to rely more on Saudi oil and Iranian oil and the oil from the Gulf sheiks, well, too bad. Too bad. That's the kind of man we have in the White House. And that's why, as a conservative nationalist, as a real principled, independent conservative like Dr. Savage, he and I have been warning the American people, the threat doesn't just come from big government. It comes from big business. It comes from corporate plutocrats, from wealthy, rich people who try to rig the system in their favor, who have bought and sold influence within both parties. And you see it clearly with this guy, Warren Buffett. So the reason why the Keystone XL oil pipeline was closed, Buffett said, I don't want the competition. No, we're going to do it through old-fashioned railroads. Even the Sierra Club, as is pointed out in the Michael Savage article, the most radical left-wing environmental organization in the country, says that shipping oil through trucks or railroads is more dangerous, more environmentally dangerous, more potentially threatening than shipping it via oil pipeline. That's the kind of hypocrites they are in the White House. This is clean. This is efficient. This is cost effective. This will make us energy independent. This pipeline will create growth. It will create jobs. It will create wealth. It will bring millions of barrels of oil. It will lower the price of gas. It is win, win, win. But because Warren Buffett doesn't want the competition, he picked up the phone and called Obama and said, Barry, tell him no on the pipeline. Tell him no. And if you lose votes, I don't give a damn, because I pay you to jump. And when I say jump, you jump. That's the kind of man we have in the White House. But you don't hear that story in the mainstream media. Oh, no. What you hear instead is this. You hear that shyster Warren Buffett running around saying, I don't pay enough in taxes. I don't pay enough in taxes. I only pay capital gains taxes. That's 15%. Because I only get investment income. I should be paying 25, 30, 40%. We should raise taxes on the wealthy. Soak the rich. Soak the millionaires. Soak the billionaires. I'm the 1%. I believe we should side with the 99%. What I've never understood about these phony left-wing progressive billionaires is you want to pay more taxes. Who's stopping you from putting as much as you want in your tax returns? Send the government as much as you want. Write them a $10 million check, a $20 million check, a $100 million check. Hey, Warren, if you love the government so much, if you love big government socialism so much, cut them a check. But no, you want other people to pay. And now what the liberal mainstream media is doing is they're now going after Mitt Romney. Why? Unlike Warren Buffett, did he call up somebody and ask for unfair competition? Did he call up somebody and say, no, close that pipeline, I don't want the competition? No, he was in vain. There are over 2,000 venture capital firms. He was one of 2,000. They compete. He made $21 million last year from his tax returns that he's released. He paid 14% in capital gains taxes. He paid over $3 million in taxes. Plus, unlike Obama, who gave $1 to charity, or Biden, who didn't even give $400 to charity, both of them are multimillionaires several times over, he gave $3 million to charity. But no, Romney should pay more. Romney should pay more. He's too wealthy. He's too rich. When did we in America suddenly begin to envy and hate the rich? When a man goes out in the world and stakes his fortune and puts his stake in the ground and through blood, sweat, and tears earns every dollar and every penny that he's made, building up businesses, making them more efficient, making them more productive, in fact, creating wealth, creating jobs, creating opportunity. Why are we to begrudge him for his success? Capitalism made America the most successful, prosperous, and greatest country in the history of the world. And now, we in America despise the very thing that made us great. Our entrepreneurs, our investors, the rich, the wealthy, the job creators. And so the question I have for you is a simple one. Let's have an open, honest debate here on the Savage Nation. Do you think Mitt Romney should pay more than 14% of his income? Do you resent the fact that Mitt Romney pays only 14% of his income? Do you think the rich should pay more? And why do you think Warren Buffett can get away with constantly asking to pay more taxes when he himself is not paying as much as he wants everybody else to pay? Is Warren Buffett a hypocrite? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. We will have in-depth analysis of tonight's State of the Union address a little bit later in the show. But so far, here's what we know. Warren Buffett's secretary will be in the gallery, up in the balcony, beside Michelle Obama. And Obama will point to Warren Buffett's secretary and say, look at this poor, modest secretary. Why does she have to pay more in tax rates, in terms of her income taxes, than Warren Buffett does, who's a billionaire, a massive billionaire investor? And he is going to play the class warfare card. He is going to play the class envy card. He is going to try to demonize the rich. And so my question to you is a very simple one. Knowing now what I've just said to you about Warren Buffett killing the Keystone XL pipeline to protect his railroad interests, is somebody like Warren Buffett an absolute hypocrite for going around and demanding that people pay higher taxes when all he has to do is simply write a check to the government? 1-800-449-8255. Tomas in New York on line 10. Thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. My comment was that Warren Buffett's so concerned about paying taxes and wants to be so fair, and he's so concerned about the federal government. And why did he shelter, you know, his $40 or $50 or $60 billion, whatever he's worth, in that charitable trust with Bill Gates? And when he sheltered it in there, I'm sure he got a huge tax write-off by doing it.
Exactly. Excellent. No, I mean, you nailed it. You nailed it. If this guy wants to pay, look, I don't want to get buried in the weeds here. I don't want to get tied up in the weeds. The thing about Mitt Romney is he doesn't just pay 14% capital gains. He also pays corporate taxes. Remember, he's not paying once. He's paying twice. So when they demagogue the issue and say, oh, look at Romney, only pays 14%, but you pay 25%, that's not fair. No, Romney pays twice. He pays a corporate tax, and then he pays a capital gains tax. But more than that, Romney paid $3 million. You know what $3 million gets? How many students does that put through elementary school? How many food stamps does that pay for? Tell me, how many unemployment checks does that pay for? All those goodies that Obama likes to dispense to bribe the electorate. My friends, if you soak the rich don't pay more, they leave. 1-800-449-8255. Is Warren Buffett a hypocrite? This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the legend, Michael Savage.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Stephen in the great state of Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Stephen?
Three quick points, okay? I have been holding on a bit. First, the moral argument you make against Gingrich, we really, as Christians, I'm a Roman Catholic, we don't want to go there. Don't forget, we are the religion of redemption and forgiveness. Secondly, you mentioned the GOP.
Okay, hold on, Stephen. Yes, we're the religion of redemption and forgiveness if you ask for forgiveness and if you change your behavior. But if you don't change your behavior, if you're a compulsive liar, or more than that, you can't stop being a womanizer, and believe me, there are a lot of skeletons in Gingrich's closet, why should I offer somebody forgiveness when he's shown me who he is as a person who's completely untrustworthy? If he'll violate the Ten Commandments, if he'll violate the sacred teachings of the church, if he'll violate the fundamental tenets of civilized human decency, why should I trust him with the presidency?
Hello, are you still there?
I'm there. I'm asking you.
Okay, are you asking me? Because I'm not Jesus Christ, neither are you. And that's...
No. But I mean, look, no one's playing Jesus Christ. But look, they did it. Look, come on. Christ did say very clearly that you shall not commit adultery. You shall not even look at another woman, that this would be wrong. Christ did teach us how to behave morally and ethically. Now, if you have a man that flagrantly disregards every decent moral principle that we know of, who leaves a wife dying of cancer? Who leaves a wife with multiple sclerosis? A philanderer who literally has sex with multiple numerous women. I mean, and you're telling me as a Christian we're supposed to say, oh, no, we have... Since when did Christianity have no standards? I mean, what's the difference between us and the liberals? I mean, if anything goes, what's the point of having standards or principles?
Hello?
Go ahead, Stephen. I'm asking you.
I'd like to respond. I mean, first of all, we have saints of the Roman Catholic Church, just to let you know, that used to go to brothels all the time. So,
No. Hold on. But they changed. For example, Augustine, I don't want to get into a theological argument. He led a very debauched life. But then he completely transformed himself and he changed. He became reborn. He became a new man. Hey, they didn't make him a saint. Hey, look, by your standards, Madonna should be a saint. By your standards, Kim Kardashian should be a saint. By your standards, Paris Hilton should be a saint. I mean, if it's the person who sleeps around most who becomes a saint, then I mean, what a saint would mean. So here you have a man who's acknowledged cheating on his wives, who we know has a zipper problem, who still has a zipper problem, who in fact asked for an open marriage. And so what are we as Christians supposed to say? Throw out the Bible? Throw out Jesus? Throw out the Ten Commandments? Throw out everything we've been taught to believe? Why? Because this guy's actually, because what? He's half decent on the debate stage? He can feign indignation? He can stand there and stick it to Juan Williams? He can stick it to John King? I'm not running. For me, this election is not about who can bash the media. This election is not about who's the best debater on the stage. This election is about the man who can restore the United States and take us away from Obama's secular socialism. I'm stunned as a Roman Catholic that this man's three divorces, I mean, you know, divorce is a sin in the Catholic Church, especially if you cheat on your wife. Does anything, does anything of the Catholic Church penetrate with you down there in Florida, Stephen?
I have three cardinals in my family, sir, so don't even go there, okay? I know.
Look, I don't care if you have three cardinals in your family. I'm asking you. Ask your three cardinals what they think. Because I'll tell you this, between you and me, I got good sources in the Vatican. They're not big fans of Newt Gingrich. I'll tell you this right now. So what are we supposed to do now? Bless open marriages? Is this now your new formula for how to... reform the Catholic Church?
Jeff, can I just make my two other points?
No, I'm asking you to defend your first point because you came out saying that somehow I'm being presumptuous. How am I being presumptuous?
You're cutting me off and the audience can't even hear me speak.
What do you mean? You've been making your points. I'm asking you for the last time. If character was an issue for Bill Clinton, if a man will betray his wife, if a man will betray his sacred vows, if a man will betray the fundamental teachings of Christianity and the Catholic Church, why should we Christians support him?
Do not judge, lest you yourself be judged.
Oh, please, spare me that.
No,
look.
Yeah, don't give me that.
No. Listen, buddy. Look, don't stand there and give me the do not judge routine, okay? Because I'm sick of it. This is what the liberal culture has been peddling for the last 50 years. We live in a non-judgmental society. No. I'm sorry. We have moral standards, my friend. We have moral standards. And this is about upholding moral standards. Okay?
Where have you been living the last 20 years? Where have you been living?
I've been living here. Where the hell have you been living?
Hey, do you know that we produce more porn in this country than any other country in the world?
And you think that's good? And you think that's good?
No,
that's my point. So why do you want to get a sex addict? Why do you want the presidency of the United States? It's unbelievable.
You are
because you're violating the Catholic Church. You're violating the teachings of Christ. You're violating everything that Christians are supposed to uphold. You want to sell your soul for what? So you can see Obama get kicked around on the debate stage by a guy who's going to bring the party down in flames? Hey, listen, I've met your kind before, okay? I know your kind, your cafeteria Catholics who pick and choose what you like and then stand there and say, oh, don't judge, don't judge. You tell me, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. What is that but standards and judgments? No, I'm sorry. When it comes to a man on his third wife who's cheated on two wives before him, when one was dying of cancer and the other one had multiple sclerosis, and then you stand there and say it's not an issue? I'm sick of it. This is what we tell our kids. Nothing is an issue anymore in this country. That's why we have soaring divorce rates. That's why we have a porn culture. That's why we have an abortion culture in this country. Because we don't stand for standards anymore. And now you want me to support this charlatan? How is he better than Bill Clinton?
We stood up
and impeached Bill Clinton.
He was reelected, wasn't he? So much for your moral country, Jeff.
I don't care. I'm not going to betray my moral standards for you.
Who do you think you are?
I'm not going to betray my moral standards. Well, then you're not a Catholic. If you think adultery is okay, you're not a Catholic. If you think pornography is okay, you're not a Catholic. If you support abortion, you're not a Catholic.
You don't even know me from Adam.
Because I can judge you by your statements. And your statements tell me everything I need to know about you. It's people like you that have betrayed the church, betrayed Christianity. And I'm telling you right now, for the last time, okay? It is people like you that have betrayed Christianity, betrayed the Catholic Church, because you can't stand on your principles. And I'm sick and tired of it. No, we in the church, we as Christians, we influence the culture. The culture doesn't influence us. Okay? So that's why, for example, in the 19th century, we opposed slavery. Christians opposed slavery. They led the abolition movement, even though there were only 10% support in the public. We lead the charge against abortion. We lead the charge against rampant divorce. We lead the charge against sexual promiscuity because it is destroying our country, destroying our children, destroying our families. So don't stand there and tell me as Catholics we have to accept a man who's been married three times, who's cheated on his wives, who's betrayed every principle the church has stood for. You know what? They don't pay me enough to deal with people like you. Honestly, there's no reasoning. There's no reasoning with people like you. There's none. There's no reasoning. It doesn't matter now. You know, it reminds me, I swear to you, I knew this country was in big trouble when I watched William Shatner's Raw Nerve. He's got this show, this interview show. And he's got this porn star. Apparently, she's very big, Jenna Jameson or something. And she says, I'm a very devout Catholic. I just like to be in tap with my sexuality. I like to enjoy sex. That's why I do porn. She even got married a second time, and with her husband, they did porn together. And she said, but I drew the line with him. I just had sex with him on the screen. That's all. Just he and my husband. And I'm thinking, is this what the Catholic Church has come down to? Now you can be a Catholic porno star. Now you can have a Catholic open marriage. You can have Catholic divorce. Let's do Catholic abortion. Hey, it all goes now. My friends, this is the end of the Roman Empire. These are the days that we're living in. I'm not asking for sainthood in the presidency. Believe me, I know we're all flawed. I know we're all sinners. I go to the confessional like as much as the next guy. But my friends, we don't have to have Caligula. It doesn't have to be a bordello. That was the argument I made under Clinton. If a man will betray his country, sorry, if he'll betray his wife repeatedly, shamelessly, without conscience, he will betray his country. Did Bill Clinton not betray us? Who gave us Al-Qaeda? Who let Iran go nuclear? Who let North Korea go nuclear? Who let Pakistan go nuclear? Who is the one that created all the seeds of Islamic fascism? Who armed the Chinese to the teeth, betraying this country at every turn? You don't think a guy like Gingrich has been doing that? Where has he been on the southern border? Where has he been with trade on China? Where has he been on every fundamental issue affecting this country? Nowhere. He's cutting ads with Nancy Pelosi. Hey, my friends, don't listen to those soft kisses he's blowing to you. I know he's flirting with you on the debate stage, but he will betray you the way he's betrayed his ex-wives. 1-800-449-8255. Jerry in Sacramento, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. In regards to Mitt Romney and the capital gains, this isn't just about Mitt Romney. It's about the fact that very wealthy people pay a lower rate than people with lower income and middle-class people making $30,000 a year. That's a system that doesn't make any sense. These people are barely struggling, getting by, to be able to pay their taxes, and people much wealthier are paying a lower effective rate. And not all capital gains were taxed previously by corporations or were paid a corporate tax. Some of them were, but some weren't. Not all corporations pay large amount of taxes. So the idea that we should have that kind of system to basically punish the poor in the lower middle class, that's absurd.
Well, I mean, look, Jerry, you do make a good point. That's why I believe in tax reform. I mean, I don't want to turn this into the policy wonk hour, but I do believe our tax system is completely wrong. I believe in a flat tax. I believe everybody should pay 15, 20% the way Rick Perry suggested across the board. You make $1 million, you pay $200,000 in taxes. You make $100,000, you pay $20,000 in taxes, and you go right down the line. And I believe that's the fairest way. Everybody should pay their fair share, and I believe that a flat tax will do that. What I don't like, and what I think is profoundly disingenuous and frankly hypocritical, is that somebody like Warren Buffett, who is a multi-billionaire, stands there all self-righteously and says, oh, the rich should pay more, the rich should pay more, the rich should pay more. Why don't you take out your checkbook and cut a check for whatever you want, $50 million, $100 million, $1 billion, but you won't do that. And the other issue that these libs don't understand is, leave aside this issue whether some people pay less in taxes and some people pay more in taxes. Obviously, if you're a poor schmuck like me who doesn't make very much money, you're just a journalist with a wife and a child, I think it's wrong that I pay a much higher rate than some multimillionaire. I don't pay 14%. I pay a hell of a lot more than 14%. But the bigger issue is this. Why is it that somebody like Warren Buffett is not a greedy businessman? Why is he suddenly this altruistic saint of America? George Soros is a saint. But when it comes to Obama, anybody who's on Wall Street, anybody who creates jobs, anybody who's a factory owner, anybody who's a manufacturer, oh, that's greedy, that's greedy, that's greedy. Well, I don't know how to break the news to everybody, but if people can't make money here, they're going to make their money in London. They're going to make their money in Hong Kong. They're going to make their money in Shanghai. Nobody has to stay here. So if you soak the rich the way Obama does, the way the Democrats do, they want 35%, 40%, 42%. That's what Warren Buffett is talking about. He wants a 40% tax rate. Soros wants closer to a 50% tax rate. Why don't you pay 50% in taxes, Georgie? Hey, Georgie, you love taxes so much. No, you hide in London. You shelter your money. That's what you do. You don't want to pay a cent in taxes. So let me get this straight. You want American businessmen to pay 40, 50%, 60% in taxes, knowing full well he's not a stupid man. They leave. They ship their jobs offshore. They don't have to do this. Go to Mexico, relocate. Go to China, relocate. He is breaking the back of this country. That's what crushing taxation does. That's why you want to be fair. If Mitt Romney was smart, You know what he should do? I defend capitalism. I defend the free market. I paid 14%. You know what? Everybody should pay 14, 15%. What I pay, everybody should pay. And you want to be rich? Be rich like me. That's what America is. It's the land of opportunity. I embody the American dream, and I will not apologize for my success or my wealth. If he made that kind of an argument, he would demolish Gingrich on the stage, he would wipe the floor with Obama, and he would win a landslide. But my friends, that takes guts. And when you have Romney, which is another story, it's on michaelsavage.com, where he now has John McCain's debate coach, Brian O'Donnell. This is the guy who coached McCain, is now the guy coaching Romney. You're not going to win. We saw McCain. We've seen that movie before. McCain didn't lay a glove on Obama. If that's who Romney is depending upon for debate advice and for his debate coach, my friends, you can kiss this country goodbye and say hello to an Obama second term. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Linda in Las Vegas, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
I think we're all missing a fundamental point when we're looking at Gingrich and his indiscretions. To suggest that we just dismiss his adulterous behavior and affairs is because he's made it right with God, is to suggest that God doesn't care about the people that he has inflicted pain upon. And as far as, well, I guess the world knows, Marianne has said she maintains that Newt has not even as much as apologized, let alone try to make it right. And that, my friends, is part of repentance.
Oh, you're completely right, Linda. Look, there are many things. If this guy was genuinely repentant, that he would have done, and he didn't do. Because the fact of the matter is, and I know because I've been following Newt almost most of my entire career, Newt cares about one thing, and that's Newt. Now, if you'll notice, I mean, look, we know about Marianne Gingrich, and he left her after she had multiple sclerosis, and he was fooling around with Calista for 6 years. In fact, the very bedroom that they had in their own apartment in Washington, D.C., so out of Marianne's bedroom was where he was fooling around with Calista and then calling her on the phone saying how much he loved her night after night. That's the kind of guy Newt Gingrich is. But leave aside all the women. Why haven't his political advisors come out and supported him? Why haven't his former staffers, his former colleagues, his former friends on the Hill, how come they're not all coming out of the woodwork and saying what a brilliant leader Newt Gingrich is? He's so trustworthy. Oh, is he trustworthy? Oh, he's such a brilliant strategist. Oh, he's so principled. Oh, he's in the lion's den. He's like Daniel in the lion's den. He'll stand there and take it no matter what. My friends, this man is a con man. That's what he is, pure and simple. He is a political mercenary who will say anything to whatever audience he's in front of. Right now, he wants your vote. You're the mistress. He's courting you. But my advice to you is, don't take the plunge. Don't marry this guy. He'll leave you. Trust me, he'll leave you. It'll be ugly. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Michael is off tonight. I'll be filling in for him. Michael, I just want to thank you one last time, my buddy, for the wonderful, heartwarming opportunity of filling in for you tonight. You have the best show in the country, and I can't tell you just once again how gratified and honored I am to be sitting in for you. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest must-read stories. And my friends, really, the issue of the hour and really the issue of the day is we are about 52 minutes away from Obama's State of the Union address. We already know pretty much what's going to be in the speech. And what I find interesting as I'm talking to all of you in the heartland, in Middle America, is I'm staring at a couple of TV screens. There's MSNBC, there's Fox News, and they're building this thing up. You would think with this kind of advanced coverage and all the excitement, and there's Ed Schultz on, and he's getting all excited, and Rachel Maddow, and then you have Bob Beckel and Bill O'Reilly, and they're all getting themselves all worked up over this speech. You would think this is the invasion of Europe. You would think this is D-Day. You would think you're going to hear Franklin Roosevelt saying the invasion of Europe has begun. The liberation of Europe has begun. This to me is, they're making this seem like this is the most important speech in our lifetime. We already know what he's going to say. What he's going to say is he's going to pick out Warren Buffett's secretary, and he's going to say she pays more in taxes in terms of a tax rate. She pays a higher tax rate than Warren Buffett, and that's wrong. And then he's going to wrap himself in the mantle of the Occupy Wall Street movement, and he's going to say he represents the 99%, and he's against the 1%, and he's going to say we have to be more just. We have to have more economic fairness. We have to have more redistribution of wealth, that we've abandoned the middle class, we've abandoned the working class, we've abandoned most of America, and it's the rich that are causing all of our problems. He's going to play the Saul Alinsky, radical socialist, class warfare, class envy, demonize the rich, attack the wealthy card. It's what he's been doing for 3 years. We're just going to get more of the same. That's all we're going to get tonight. And so he's going to stand there and call for higher taxes, higher capital gains taxes, higher income taxes. He's going to want to attack the rich. He's going to want higher corporate taxes. He's going to want to spend more money. He's not going to acknowledge the fact that he is the one that has driven us to the verge of national bankruptcy. He's the one that's crippled us with these runaway deficits and debt. He's the one that has spent us into the ground. He is the one who has worsened and deepened this recession. He is the one who has behaved illegally, immorally, and unconstitutionally at every turn. He's not going to mention that. And so, you know, I was just talking with Beowulf, the executive producer, during the break, and he and I were going back and forth. Have you ever heard any president of the United States say the State of the Union is horrible? I mean, you even know what they're going to say. They say the same thing every year with the same fanfare. And if you noticed, both sides of the aisle, they all clap in the same robotic, methodic way. And they clap. And then when he says something partisan, then the Democrats are going to get up and cheer him on, and the Republicans will be sitting, and there will be Michelle Obama, and he'll thank her. They always get a soldier. They always get some soldier, poor schmuck. They drag him up there, and thank you for your service. Then you always get a teacher or a fireman or, you know, this one time it'll be a secretary. You always get somebody up there, and it's the same routine, the same theater, over and over and over again. And I have to tell you, I would respect a president more if he would just get up and say, I'm going to level with you. State of the Union is not very good. We're in deep trouble. We're sitting at a $15 trillion national debt. We're going the way of Greece. Our entitlements, our spending, our deficits are completely out of control. The world doesn't respect us anymore. We're losing in Afghanistan. We've lost in Iraq. Iran is on the verge of a nuclear bomb. We're in big trouble. We're in big, big trouble. You know, if he just said that, can you imagine the shock in the room? Can you imagine how you could cut the tension with a knife? How people would just stand up and say, oh my God, finally, somebody is telling us the truth. Somebody is not lying to us. It's not ceaseless, constant propaganda. And I have to say, for the last 40 years in particular, what has the State of the Union address been except for an exercise in more government intervention, more statism, more socialism, more spending? Have you noticed that? It's been 40 years now. It's almost like the State of the Union is strong, but it can be stronger if we only spend on more money for education, more money for teachers, more money for the environment, more money for healthcare, more money for student loans. You just check off the list. Which constituency do I want to bribe for the upcoming elections with our taxpayer money, with money that's not even his? That's all a State of the Union has become now. It has become an exercise in socialism. It has become an exercise in statism. It has become an exercise in flexing government muscle and government power. And in particular, it is there to defend and legitimize the status quo. Everything about it. It's all about defending and entrenching the status quo. The State of the Union is good. It's always good. It's never bad. It's never okay. It's never flawed. No, it's good. It's always good. Great. Superb. Outstanding. Our State of the Union has never been stronger. I bet you'll say that tonight. Our State of the Union has never been stronger. That's an automatic lie. Our credit rating was downgraded. We are staring at Greece. We are now maybe on the verge of a third world war in the Middle East with Iran, the Hitler of our time, getting a nuclear bomb. But he's going to say it. And then everybody gets up and claps, both the Republicans and the Democrats. They're engaging in this lie, in this massive fraud, both of them. And what they're basically saying, and what you're seeing with your eyes, what's being reinforced in your mind, whether you know it or not, subtly, unconsciously, is we can manage the country. We are the Mandarins. We are the elites that control the seat of power. We run this country, and we do a damn good job at it. And we pat each other on the back. But it's great, but it could be even better. So hence, we have to do more, which only aggrandizes our power. That's the game that they play. And they play it again and again and again and again. And so what I find interesting, and what I'd like to know from everybody, members of the Savage Nation, is do you care about the State of the Union tonight? Are you going to be watching the State of the Union tonight? Are you expecting Obama to say something that you think he shouldn't say, or it would not be prudent for him to say? Is there something you would want him to say that you think he's not going to say? But the fundamental question is, do you think the State of the Union is no longer necessary? Is it out of date? Is it now become simply nothing more than cheap political theater to entrench the legitimacy of our bankrupt ruling class? 1-800-449-8255. Should the State of the Union address go? Is it outdated? Is it time to basically sweep it into the dustbin of history? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. Scott in Sacramento, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. To answer your question about the State of the Union, yes, it's repetitive, and I agree with a lot of what you said, but I think it's useful because it allows the president to put out there, you know, what has actually been accomplished and kind of put to rest or at least quiet down the whole things are getting worse rhetoric from every direction, so that he could point out, you know, achievements like resurrecting the automobile industry and the fact that the stock market is soaring. And since his policies have gone into effect, the unemployment rate's gone down, economic growth has increased every quarter. And, you know,
Scott, are you being sarcastic or are you being serious?
Yeah, economic growth was about -6% when he came to office. Once the stimulus package was passed, it's been growing by at least 1%.
Scott, I mean, are you a Democratic staffer? Because you're literally giving me Debbie Wasserman Schultz's talking points. And Scott, I can tell you right now, your facts are completely inaccurate. Economic growth under Obama has gone down. I mean, you can prove that. That's just facts. You can easily prove that. Under Obama, when he came into power, unemployment was under 8%. In fact, the argument that he used for why we needed the nearly $1 trillion stimulus was to keep unemployment under 8%. It soared all the way up over 10%. It has now gone to under 9%. It's about 8.5, 8.6. But they're cooking the books because they're not counting the people who've given up looking for work. If you count the people who've given up looking for work, then the real unemployment rate is more like 15, 16, 17%. So he's failed on the jobs front. He's failed on the economic growth front. You mentioned the auto industry. Scott, look, you want to be a liberal, be a liberal. I have friends who are liberals. I have good friends who are progressives. But he destroyed the auto industry. Now, that's just spin. Now you're just buying the Democratic talking points. It's like my Republican friends, when they start repeating what Boehner is saying, I just turn off. I go, look, forget it. Now you're being a political hack. Because what he did is, instead of allowing GM and Chrysler to go into a proper bankruptcy, where then they would come out leaner, meaner, more efficient, make the difficult choices that they need to make, especially on these ridiculous legacy costs, these pensions and healthcare benefits to workers and previous workers, which are bankrupting this company. He gave the company over to the United Auto Workers. He gave it over to the unions. GM is not producing a better product. GM is not producing a better car at a better price or for better value. Look at the Chevy Volt. This was supposed to be the car of the future. This was the electric car. This was going to be the ultimate car that would take us off oil and natural gas. It is literally a toy car. It's burning up. You're paying $40,000, $42,000 for a car that catches on fire, that nobody wants. It's a hazard to people who drive on the road. Obama told them, I want you to build the Volt. So my point is just a very simple one. He has wrecked the auto industry. He has wrecked the healthcare industry. He has wrecked the student loan industry. He has tried to nationalize every sector of this economy. And this is why we are now at $15 trillion in national debt. What people don't understand is this. The number, look, Stalin once said, you murder one person, it's a tragedy. You murder a million, it's a statistic. When I say $15 trillion in national debt, people just tune out. What is $15 trillion? $15 trillion is so much money. Literally, if you took $1 bills, it goes all the way to the moon and comes back. We are the most indebted country in history. If this man is reelected, if we do not cut spending, if we do not reform our entitlement programs, If we do not dramatically change course, we are Greece in 4 years. We hit a wall. It's over. We become a third world country. Nobody will buy our bonds. Nobody will invest in this country. We will not be able to pay for our basic social programs and services. We will simply be paying interest on the debt. We will become like Argentina. This is how reckless, this is how irresponsible this man is. You're not going to hear that from him tonight. Not a word of that. Instead, he's going to stand there the way Castro does, the way Kim Jong-il did, the way Putin does, and say, it's morning again in America. Things couldn't be better. Viva la revolution! The revolution is working perfectly. It isn't. This man has been lying to the American people for 3 years nonstop. And my friends, if we re-elect him one more time, it will be the end of traditional America as we know it. That's the reality behind tonight's State of the Union address. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. What do you think about tonight's State of the Union address? Are you expecting Obama to say something that you think needs to be said? Are you looking forward to the State of the Union? Do you think the State of the Union should be done away with? Is it now just become political theater and one big waste of time? I want to hear from you. Marjorie in New York, thank you for patiently holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. No, I'm not giving up. All we have to do is vote this man in Washington out and get a man of integrity in. I'm not forgetting the 400,000 young men who died in World War II for this country, the over 700,000 who came back injured, and the young men who, after 9/11, set out to defeat the enemy who caused 9/11. We would be betraying these boys if we had that attitude. We get a new man in, and I'm for Gingrich. I mean, excuse me, what am I saying? For Romney.
Marjorie, are you going to watch tonight's State of the Union? Honestly.
I am going to watch, but I know what to expect.
Really? Oh, okay. Marjorie, okay. I mean, you're a better woman. I mean, Marjorie, look, I'm doing commentary on another show after this. So I'm going to, as a newsman, I have to watch it. But I'm going to be very candid with you. If I was not in the news business, I would just read a front page story on it tomorrow morning. You're going to see 50, 55, 60 standing ovations. In fact, in the newsroom, we actually appoint one person, I kid you not, I'm not making this up, to count the number of applauses the president gets and how many standing ovations he gets. So we get the exact number to put it into the story the next day. So it's going to be the same people getting up, clapping at the predictable times. It's going to be the same socialist spiel that he's been giving us for the last 3 years. Again and again and again, with all the pomp and circumstance, all these politicians shaking hands, giving each other high fives, patting each other on the back. You're going to see phony Washington, official Washington, arrogant Washington on full display tonight. And I have to tell you, really, I have better things to do with my life. If I was not a newsman, believe me, I could wash my hair. I could watch an episode on television. I could watch an episode of CSI. I could read a book. I could take a walk. I mean, there are many things I could do. I could twiddle my thumbs. There's a million things I could do except to watch the State of the Union. And I have to tell you, outside of the political class and outside of their mandarins in the media, I don't think people in America really care about the State of the Union address. I really don't. They know what Obama's going to say. They know he's in the tank for Warren Buffett. They know he's in the tank for George Soros. They know now he can't run on his record. They know that. He can't. He has no single accomplishment. This man has done nothing but spread destruction everywhere across this country. And you nailed it, Marjorie. This election, frankly, this year, 2012, upon the heels of the great Tea Party victory in 2010, I believe is the most momentous year in our lifetime. This, I believe, is why we were put on this earth. Every generation must stand up and defend freedom. We did it in 1776. We did it in 1812. We did it in 1860. We did it in 1941. And now we did it in 1980. And now we have to do it again. And if we get this decision wrong, I believe that future generations will never forgive us. This is not only about us. This is about our children and our grandchildren. And the most important issue at stake, forget liberal, conservative, forget Democrat, Republican, is are we going to be the nation that our founding fathers wanted us to be? As Shakespeare would put it, shall we be or not be? That is the question. Because what Obama is attempting to do and why he is running for a second term, and the only reason why he's running for a second term, is because he wants to transform us into a European socialist superstate. He wants to end America as we know it. That's why he pushed for Obamacare. That's why he's been bankrupting this country through his massive deficit spending. That's why he's declared war on capitalism. That's why he wants to give amnesty to illegal immigrants. This has been the essence of his entire political philosophy. In fact, if people did their homework, all you have to do, don't even take my word for it. You know what? Assume I'm a crazy right winger. Jeff Kooner is the craziest right winger in the history of the world. Okay? Just read Obama's own autobiography, Dreams of My Father. It's all there. There's no conspiracy. It's all there. In that book, he talks about how his father was a Kenyan Marxist, how his father was a Kenyan anti-Western, anti-colonialist, in which he said the poverty of the third world, the oppression of the third world, the misery of the third world, including the Muslim world, was because of America, was because of the West. And throughout that entire book, he lists one Marxist teacher and philosopher after another that he says he admires. In fact, he openly says his political mission and objective is to, quote, achieve, fulfill the dreams of my father. My friends, that's the man we have in the White House. That's the man who's going to be spinning his lies to you tonight. That's what's at stake in this election. That's why I'm telling you, we have to pick the best nominee who will defeat him. Because if we do not defeat him, then everything we have done in this country's history will be for nothing. Because we stand on the shoulders of our forefathers. That's what a nation is. That's what a society is. You build and you continue what your father and your grandfather and your great-grandfather gave to you. You don't just throw it away. That's what we're going to be doing this election. It can be a point of no return where we never come back. And I'm not willing to do that. And you want to know why? I'm going to be very candid with all of you. It may get me in trouble, and I don't care, because I'm going to speak the truth to power tonight. You want to know why Dr. Michael Savage is the fiercest opponent of Obama on talk radio today? You want to know why he's loathed by the conservative establishment? You want to know why I give no quarter against Obama? You want to know why the conservative establishment can't stand me? Because he and I are cut from the same ideological cloth and the same cultural cloth. And you know what that is? We are the son of immigrants. But we are not just the son of immigrants. We are the son of immigrants who came from behind the Iron Curtain. His ancestors came from Russia. Mine came from the Balkans in Croatia. We know what communism was. We know what communism is. We know what it is to have a society that's lost its freedom, that's lost its hope, that's lost its connection to God. And that's what's at stake in this election. He heard stories from his father. He heard stories from his grandfather. I heard stories from my father. I heard stories from my grandfather. And I vowed never would I ever allow to see socialism come on my soil. And here I am in 2012, in the greatest nation in the history of the world, only 20 years after we won the Cold War. And now we are to vote this man in power again and do away with everything we have built. No way. No way. Now, look, as Churchill said in the fight against Nazi Germany, victory is not guaranteed. And some civilizations commit suicide. But if we go down, I will go down fighting. I will go down with my honor. And that's why I've said to you, I will not support Newt Gingrich. Because I believe he will lose. In fact, I know he will lose. Because the White House is doing cartwheels, seeing that he's leading in the polls. This election is too important to throw it away on some candidate. This is not 1988. This is not 1996. This is not 2000 or 2004, where you can say, the country will survive. It doesn't matter. One politician, another politician. We don't survive after this one. It's over. In the Washington parlance, as Obama likes to say, it's a game changer. And so I am going to go down fighting. And I'm asking all of you, this country is worth it for us to fight. And that's why it's time for us to go out in the polls and let our voice be heard. And let these liberal elites, let these corrupt socialists in this city know, you know what? Maybe this works in China. Maybe this works in Russia. Maybe this works in Europe. But this is America. We're cut from a different cloth. Our roots are a little different. And here, we love freedom. Those rights come to us, not from Obama, and not from Nancy Pelosi, and not from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but from God Almighty himself. That's what our revolution was about. And that's why we have been the beacon of the world, a shining light to the entire world. And I'm not going to go quietly into the good night. And neither, I guarantee you, is Dr. Savage. So you can vilify us, and you can call us right-wing crazies, and you can ban us, and you can call us kooks. But I'm telling you, if nobody else in the media has the guts to tell you, I'm going to tell you, Obama is a socialist dictator. And he is trying to impose tyranny on this country. And that's why come 2012, I don't give a damn who the Republicans put up. They can put up a dog catcher for all I care. I'm voting for anybody but Obama, and so should you. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to our blazing phone lines. Jim in Albany, thanks for holding. Jim, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff, how are you? Thanks for
I'm good.
Taking my call.
My pleasure.
Couple things, buddy. Yeah, the State of the Union, I think it's really important that it's a tradition that we continue to do along with a lot of the other traditions that we've have instilled in us from our founding fathers from the very beginning, and we should continue those traditions. But I think what a lot of people are missing, I mean, yeah, this president's just done an absolute horrible job and has destroyed a lot of things that a lot of people have created, you know, in his term. But I think there's a bigger picture that we all are missing in the whole thing. And that bigger picture is it's not just Republicans. It's not just Democrats. It's not just the president. It's not just any of it. The whole thing is a disaster. Every bit of it is a disaster, regardless of what, you know, political group you follow and whatever you believe in. Every bit of it's a mess. If you look at the fact that in 3 years we have not had a budget passed, since the day the man took the office to today, I mean, we were just saying on your radio station yesterday that we've passed the 1,000-day mark of no budget.
That's No, I know, Jim. I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, it's almost, it's mind-boggling. It's almost mind-numbing. Now, you got to pass a budget in your house. I got to pass a budget in my house. If I'm spending more than I'm taking in, we're in trouble. And the house is going to be foreclosed, or we're not going to be able to pay our bills, or they're going to turn the lights off. So we have a budget in our family, and it's a month-to-month budget. And basically, it's a very simple rule. You don't spend more than what you take in. Now, if I have to do that, and you have to do that, and tens and tens and tens and tens of millions of American people have to do that, why shouldn't these shysters on Capitol Hill have to do that? Instead, I'm watching the TV screens right in front of me as I'm talking to you. And it's like the late Roman Empire. They're all shuffling in now. It's 6 minutes, 6 seconds. It's like a countdown. 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we're at 5 minutes now. 5 minutes, 59, 58. It's almost like New Year's Eve. It's like the ball is going to drop for the new year, or it's like we're about to invade Europe. And I see them all coming in, one after another, all huddled up. I see Senator Richard Shelby, Alabama Republican, in bed with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I then see John Warner, that Democrat from Virginia, who's been in bed with almost every foreign lobbyist I can think of here on Capitol Hill. I see Al Franken, who stole the election in Minnesota. He's rolling in, shaking hands. They're all just coming in. I see Susan Collins from Maine, that rhino, that phony Republican. And they're all just coming in, clapping, patting each other on the back. You're great. No, I'm great. You guys can't even pass a budget. You can't even pass a budget. I mean, tell me, Jim, did you ever think in this great nation of ours we'd have a Congress for 3 years that couldn't pass a budget?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely
not. No, I know. It's depressing. I mean, really, honestly, look, it's depressing. And that's why, look, I'm an equal opportunity conservative. I'm not in the tank for the Republicans. Believe me, I say out with all of them. Get rid of all of them. Just clean house, baby. Get rid of all of them, because we don't need them. But I'm telling you right now, these guys on Capitol Hill don't understand one thing. And I have to give Gingrich his due on this. I have to. What he's tapping into is the anger that's out there. Because people sense exactly what you're saying, Jim. That things are completely out of control here. That they are so drunk with power. They live in this bubble. It really is like the Roman Senate. You know, and they're knifing each other in the back all the time. They're always backstabbing. But then in public, they embrace each other. They're all embracing each other and telling each other how great they are. And then the president's going to walk on stage like a Roman emperor. And everybody's going to stand up and clap. All hail Caesar. All hail Caesar. All hail Caesar. That's all you're going to be hearing now for the next hour. And then we have these mandarins on the media. I see Charles Krauthammer giving his analysis on Fox News, what the president has to say, what he shouldn't say, how he should pitch it, how he shouldn't pitch it. And then I see Dan Pfeiffer, White House Communications Director, and he's saying the president's going to stand for this and the president's going to stand for that. And all I'm thinking is the country's going to hell in a handbasket. You can't even balance a budget. Hell, our credit has been downgraded. The Chinese are buying up our debt. I mean, to me, you know what's more important? The Politburo meeting in Beijing. Oh, what's our destiny going to be? Guys, what did they say in Beijing today? Are they going to dump more products on us? Are they going to lend us more money, or are they going to turn off the tap? Because if they turn off the tap, we're finished. I mean, this is what it's come down to. And instead, I got to tell you, I meet these egomaniacs. I meet them all the time on Capitol Hill. They don't say hi to you. They walk right by you. They don't say hi to their staffers. They're all in these $1,500 suits and outfits. And they're always getting their hair done. I swear to you, you wouldn't believe it. There's got to be, there's a lot. You want to make money? I'm giving you all free advice right now. Come down and open up a hair salon in Washington, D.C., because there's not enough of them for these phony politicians. My friends, don't watch the State of the Union tonight. Trust me. Do anything. Walk your dog. Have a drink. Do anything. Take a bath. Wash your hair. It's a big waste of time. Trust me. This is Jeff Cooner sitting for the great Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.